We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WIXR.org.
And we're going to be talking about Stanley Booth this morning. And Stanley passed away a few weeks ago. And we're going to play some songs that he is connected to. He was quite the raconteur, quite the writer, and we're going to delve into a little bit of that this morning. I think we'll go ahead and start off. Do you want to start off with something from Beale Street Saturday Night?
Yeah.
Because Stanley wrote the liner notes to this. Bye, Lauren.
Bye.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hope you are around to listen to Lauren's show, you know, her get you up and moving.
You got it digitally, right?
Yeah, I got it digitally. Okay. So, I was gonna play a song, and this record was done in what year, Jim? Probably 1975 or something like that.
I'm thinking a little later than that.
Okay.
I just know that when the Orpheum was selling them, I think it all came together. The Memphis Development Foundation.
Right.
Are they even around anymore?
You know, I don't know.
Anyway, they were the folks, I believe, that got the Orpheum, you know, restored.
Yeah.
To its glory that we know it today. But
Lee Wright did that.
Lee Wright.
Lee Wright. He was right in there, man. Yeah. Good for him.
Anyway, it's a great collection of songs that. You know, had anybody but, I guess, Dickinson put it together.
Yeah.
You know, it might have had some clunkers on it, but everything on here is pretty great.
Yeah.
Including some talking from the great Thomas Pinkston.
Yeah.
Really a look into history and then the current state of things, too. So you want to play a Sid Selvage song off of this?
Yeah, we'll play Walking Down Beale Street by Sid Selvage. And then we'll read, I'll get you to, if you want to read some of the liner notes there.
Okay.
Because Stanley wrote this, and he like I say, you're gonna get what a great writer he was if you weren't really familiar with this
record sleeve, since the print is so tiny,
yeah,
and it's a 12-inch vinyl record that I have here.
Yeah.
That would be a good introduction to Stanley's writing, you know.
Yeah, it really would.
He was, you know, he wanted to get the whole story across and had a great way of doing it. So,
right. Okay, here's Sid Selvage. We're doing Walking Down Beale Street.
Windows are broken, doors are nailed tight. Most of the old places empty tonight. If you can remember what it was like walking down Beale Street Saturday night. Doors always open, walk right on in. Drink a little whiskey, talk to your friend. Feeling all right, walking down Beale Street Saturday night. Wish I could go back to Memphis.
Thank you.
taking his fall. As I went up down the road, Mr. the Frog and Old Main Toad. Every time Soot the Frog would sing, you know that old toad would cut that pigeon wing. You know, I went out to barn for the milk a cow. I jumped on a billy goat cause I didn't know how. You know, as a monkey was sitting in a bale of straw, you know, he was winking at his mother-in-law. She promised me when she dies she'll set me free. She lived so long till her head got bald. You know God had to kill her with white oak mold.
All right, well folks, that's Furry Lewis singing.
You can't you can't copy that, Willie.
No, you can't copy that. That is about as original as you get. And you know, we played the first song by Sid Selvage, which I think Sid represented the new generation that was coming along.
Yeah.
You know, and Furry certainly represented the old generation that had been there and done all these things and recorded all these records, you know, back in the 1930s.
And then languished in obscurity for decades.
That's right. Till these young white kids came along and rediscovered them. I hate that term, rediscovered.
Yeah.
But you know, they had the means and the passion to find these people. You know, and I want, and Stanley wrote this incredible article for Playboy.
Mm. Kind of got his career going.
He really did, but it's so beautiful. I reread it the other day. I mean, I read it when it came out in probably 1972 or something. But I reread it the other day. It's just beautifully, beautifully written. He goes down to Furry's house, and Furry lived down off Beale Street because at that time, Furry was working for and had been working for the city of Memphis for years, and he swept Beale Street.
With his wooden leg.
That's right.
He didn't sweep it with his wooden leg.
That's right, yes.
Used his wooden leg to get around.
But he would get down on Beale Street at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and Stanley was with him, and walked with him on his daily route of him picking up trash and taking it down to the place where they dumped the trash and then burned it.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know this was Memphis. Folks, if you want, we should somehow put out a reading list of Stanley stuff, or you can just get on and Google Stanley Booth writings, and a bunch of stuff will pop up. It's incredible stuff. So, Jim, this Beale Street Saturday night...
That we just heard two songs from.
That's right. Read us a little bit of Stanley's writing.
Okay, this is, I guess, written in the earlier mid-70s. Memphis is called the Bluff City because it is on the highest spot on the Mississippi River between the Ohio River and Natchez. But the bluff is near its lowest point at the foot of Beale Street. The Kate Adams, the Viney Swing, and other great steamboats are gone. But the river is still wet, a witness, never silent, which never accuses but sometimes condemns. Beale Street begins at the river, struggles up the bluff, across the IC tracks, that's Illinois Central, across the IC tracks and Front Street, past empty sockets and dry rot of urban blight, the quiet voices of man down the street, trading the cotton, do not reach our ears. And even the ghosts of the girls of the original Gayoso Hotel seem to be asleep.
Ah,
yeah, wow. That's pretty poetic.
That man. Is poetic.
How do you like my, Fred Cook voice?
I was digging that.
Super low real voice today because I'm reeking with cold germs.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. The next person who uses this mic, it'll all be
they'll be all right. It'll
anyway,
be gone,
yeah, right? Stanley kind of had a way with words. And you know, even if he got kind of floral and like a little, it was still entertaining and good stuff, man. So
yeah. But you know, he had such a deep understanding of things, and I think that was it just came. You know, he was well educated for one thing,
and
he was just an intelligent guy, and had wide ranging interests too. Mm.
Well, the interest is what what made him so intelligent. I think you know you can only get so much from your schooling, Willie.
That's right.
So he had his ear to the ground in many ways.
Yeah, he did. And you know, Jim and I knew Stanley, and we would go by and see him and check on him and things the last few years. And always, I was always one of my favorite things when I think about Stanley is you and Stanley were sitting there one day talking about jazz, and I don't know anything about jazz, and I was just fascinated with where his knowledge and your knowledge went. It was really a great conversation.
He was the kind of guy who would throw things out just to kind of see if you were hip to them.
That's right. Yes. Always testing. Always testing.
Yeah. And I caught some of his stuff, but then I can't remember the singer's name. It was a female singer, American jazz singer, and he had a CD of hers there that must have been pretty rare because you know, like I say, she was obscure.
Right.
But he put it on or had me put it on, and it was great, man. I could have listened to it all day.
Yeah.
But, you know, he I don't know, man. You know, not to sound like too much of a fanboy or something, but he, at least me, I'm a musician, you know, and he knew of what some stuff I had done, and he made me feel like I was, you know, in the lineage of importance of cats that came before me because I'm up on who, you know, I'm very aware of who came before, whose shoulders I'm standing on, you know. So I think he appreciated that, if nothing else, that I at least kind of knew how I got where I am.
Sure. And I mean, I will say this, you know, Stanley didn't, he didn't admire a lot of people. I would say that, but I tell you what, he admired you.
Oh, well,
because he you had gotten his attention by knowing what you know and doing what you do and doing what you've done your whole life.
Well, we have a lot of mutual friends too, and he you know had his own ideas about those associations, I guess.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I was like in some kind of little club or something.
Yeah, he respected you.
He made me feel, you know, like I was somebody.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that's always great. And maybe now is the time to, can we scoot over to his connection with Johnny Mercer?
Oh, yeah, man. I will find this if for you, if nothing else. I was in Georgia for something, maybe Atlanta, and like a hotel lobby or picked up like this Georgia magazine. You know, it's always full of ads and stuff, like Memphis magazine and or whatever, Southern Living. And there was a front page, you know, article about Johnny Mercer, and by God, it was written by Stanley Booth. So I just picked it up and kept it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know if I could get another copy of it anywhere. So.
Right.
But he was of course, from Waycross. And I had an aunt from Waycross, or that lived in Waycross.
Okay.
Aunt Annie. Mm. Anyway, and he was wherever he was stationed in life, you know, he seemed to want to know all about the history of all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Johnny Mercer was a Savannah guy.
Mm-hmm.
But wrote a million great songs of our American tapestry of music.
Right.
And Stanley was hip to all that. And I got to find that to reread it. But yeah, play some Johnny Mercer.
Yeah, here's
Georgia.
Here's Autumn Leaves by Johnny Mercer.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Autumn Leaves by Johnny Mercer.
Johnny Mercer wrote the lyrics to that song.
Right.
And the American, the English version lyrics, it was kind of a French standard, I guess from the 40s, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we got another Johnny Mercer song
but
here.
But Stanley dug the jazz, so I'm sure.
Yeah, he did. He was a real jazz head.
Yeah, play one of Johnny's. You got Johnny singing it?
Yeah, I think this
I should have grabbed my Johnny Mercer Capitol Collection CD.
All right, here we go. This is, you've heard this before, Accentuate the Positive.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Gather around me, everybody. Gather around me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark,
Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark.
What did they do just when everything looked so dark?
Man, they said we better accept you ain't the positive, even mine ain't the negative, and latch on to the affirmative.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No.
You got to accentuate the positive,
yes.
Mine ain't the negative, and latch
on
to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Wow. Hey, Jim, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Well, I try not to, but he kind of rules my life sometimes.
That's great stuff. That was Johnny Mercer doing Accentuate the Positive.
Yeah.
And you probably heard that on the Ed Sullivan Show or something if you're of a certain age, right?
Yeah, I'm glad I remember stuff that's really old.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And you know, my mother had stuff she remembered that was really old, but I've got my stuff that I remembered that happened a really long time ago.
Yeah.
So I guess we have to be glad that we made it this far or something.
I'm certainly glad we have. Folks, you're listening to Songs That Move You on WYXR in Memphis, Tennessee. We're 91.7 on your digital dial, or we're at WYXR.org. If you're listening anywhere else, and we're just glad you're here this morning. It's a beautiful day in Memphis. I hope wherever you are, it's a beautiful day too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have listeners from all over the place.
I'd say far and wide.
Far and wide.
I wonder if Peggy's listening up upstate New York.
Man, I hope Peggy is listening. We love you, Peggy.
We do love you, Peggy.
And there are just people all around listening to us, and I love that. Because that's what WYXR is all about. This is all volunteer radio, and we're glad to be here. Jim does a show on Thursday afternoons.
I do.
Jim has a 2-hour show. It's called Of Cabbages and Kings.
Yep.
Who are the cabbages?
Well, you'll find out when you tune in.
That's right.
Thursdays from 2 to 4, Willie.
Okay. I always enjoy it. You always play stuff that I'm just like, where did he find that?
Well,
it's probably from talking to Stanley, maybe.
No.
No.
Maybe.
All right. You know, Jim and I were talking about another thing is that so many people who were, you know, connected with Memphis and people from Memphis in the late 60s and especially the early 70s, they were kind of stretching out in the world and getting to know people, and they started making connections. They were, I would say, the connectors to this other music that was going on, and to the British artists that were playing blues, that were playing Mississippi and Tennessee music and all that, but didn't know a whole lot about it, you know. And I think these Brits really liked the fact that they knew some people from Memphis, and so, you know, and in that group was certainly Stanley Booth and Don Nix and a lot of people who were friends with George Harrison and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones and people like that. And Stanley was tight with Keith, and we believe that Stanley introduced Gram Parsons to Keith Richards.
I think that is the story.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, you start hearing that kind of country influence through the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, man, I remember the first time I heard the country version of God, what was it? Can't Always Get What You Want.
There's like
this alternate, wow. You mean they recorded it twice and completely different back in the day? You know, you just think, you hear a song, that's what they recorded.
That's what it
know?
Is, yeah.
So, yeah, somewhere that came out, and that was kind of interesting to me that the Stones would go. But then later on, in their later records, you know, they would visit that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think they were all looking, too, because at their core, all of those people, Eric Clapton, you know, the Beatles, everybody, they were fascinated by this music that they were trying to make.
Yeah.
You know, because they had heard it and it all came from around here.
And most of those Brits were working class people.
Yeah, they were. They got it. Yeah. Yeah.
The animals, I only recently in the past 20 years discovered that the Animals were really a good blues band.
Yeah, they were.
And you know, you go, oh well, how can they be blues if they're from England? But they got the right records.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, they were listening to the right stuff. So I think what we're going to do, and talking about Gram Parsons, then I think this just led to Stanley being around the Rolling Stones a lot more, and Stanley famously wrote the best biography of the Rolling Stones, and it took him a long time to write it.
Well, also you got to remember Stanley knew Graham through, the neck of the woods that they were both from.
That's
originally.
Right. Yes. Yeah. They
Okefenokee Swamps.
That's right. Bonded from being from South Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay. So, what are we gonna play here? A Gram Parsons song?
Play up Gram Parsons song, and then we'll. Okay. How much time we got?
We got 30. Well, we got 29 minutes.
I know.
We're okay. All right. Here's Gram Parsons doing "Return of the Grievous Angel."
Won't you scratch my itch, sweet Annie Rich, and welcome me back to town? Come out on your porch or step into your parlor and I'll tell you how it all went down. Out with the truckers and the kickers and the cowboy angels, and a good saloon in every single town. Oh, and I remembered something you once told me. And I'd be damned if it did not come true. 20,000 roads I went down, 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 and they all led me straight back home to you. 'Cause I headed west to grow up with the country. Those prairies with those thought about a calico bonnet from Cheyenne to Tennessee.
We flew straight across that river bridge last night, 2:30. Switchman waved his lantern goodbye today as we went rolling through. Billboards and truck stops passed by the grievous angel. Now I know just what I have to do.
Pick it for me, James.
Cheyenne to Tennessee.
The news I could bring, I met up with the king on his head and an amphetamine crown. Talked about unbuckling that old Bible belt and lighted out for some desert town. Out with the truckers and the kickers and the cowboy angels and a good saloon in there.
Something you once told me, and I'll be damned if it did not come true.
20,000 roads I went down, 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 and they all led me straight back home to you.
Graham Parsons, Return of the Grievous Angel. Yep, that was a good one. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jim Spake is here with me this morning, and we are talking about our friend, recently departed, Stanley Booth.
And he was the kind of guy who, I think it was you and I that went over to check in on him one day and left his door open all the time. So
yeah.
I guess so people who were getting groceries for him and stuff. He didn't get out. He didn't have a car.
Yeah.
Didn't want a car. We prefer people to wait on him hand and foot, frankly.
There you go. Yeah.
But anyway, we went over to check in on him, and when you go see him, he'd always go, "Hey, could you move this box for me? Let me wheel over there with you." "Okay, yeah, just take that and put it in the first bedroom." No, the other bedroom.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went over there one time, and he had this crappy little cassette player on his lap, listened to a tape of some people talking, and kind of left it going to make us go, "Hey, what are you listening to there, Stanley? Who is that on that cassette tape that you're not turning off?" "Oh, I found this interview I did with Graham Parsons. Just listened to that."
Yeah.
"Oh, okay. Well, that's cool." And eventually he turned it off because it was pretty scratchy recordings.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder if that stuff got transcribed and...
Yeah. Oh, I'm hoping that whoever winds up with his archives, that those files, whatever they will be, you know, whether it's, you know, graphics files or music or writing or whatever, that those will be available for people. Because this is, I mean, he was...
Ornery.
He was ornery, but he was so active during that great time of of revolution in America, you know, the early 70s and really through the 70s. So a lot of good stuff. One thing that I neglected to do when we played that Furry Lewis cut is I wanted to read this. This is something that Stanley wrote, and I just want to read a little bit of it for you, and it's talking about Furry Lewis. It says, "The night Furry died, I saw that fat yellow moon and knew it would carry him off. The funeral was crowded, lots of TV and speeches by people who never knew him, who couldn't have found his house with a police escort. Never mind. He didn't get the three white horses in a line. He didn't get lowered down on a silver chain. I'm sorry to say I haven't visited his grave since his burial, so I don't know if it is being, as he incessantly requested, kept clean. To tell you the truth, I can hardly believe he's dead. I know a number of people like that who are simply too talented to be dead. I ain't got nothing. Ain't never had nothing, and don't expect to never get nothing," he used to say. "But I'll tell you this, I'm just as smart as any man in this house." He always was, too. That was from Stanley Booth. He wrote that in Brunswick, Georgia in 1992.
And he wrote it with love and understanding.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. All right. Well, another thing is, and this is something that I didn't even know. I interviewed Stanley a few years ago. I do a show on WYPL television, the library channel, and I had Stanley on as a guest. And we were talking, and we were talking about American recording studios, just, you know, all the Memphis stuff. And I maybe mentioned, you know, "Did you ever hang around American?" And he said, "What did I?" Yes, I did.
I built that place.
Right. I was right there in the middle of it. And but apparently he wrote the liner notes to Dusty in Memphis, the Dusty Springfield record. And we're going to play a song now because it is an important thing. And Jim, you got a little something to read about the Dusty album there or something? I could not find his liner notes because the liner notes had been rewritten in 2002 by Elvis Costello, which I guess is a great thing, but we wanted to hear Stanley's. But what did he say there, or what did they say about that record?
Are these his words or yours?
No, those are his words, I believe.
Now, before I read this, and I haven't pre-read it, but so Dusty in Memphis, was it actually recorded in Memphis?
It was. She did the vocals
in
though,
New York.
In New York, yeah. And they said that she had not ever, like, worked with, like, just tracks or stuff, you know? So I'm sure it was a weird thing. And they said that she was very shy. Yeah.
It says, the recording was a challenge for Wexler. That's Jerry Wexler.
Yep.
In his book, Rhythm and the Blues, Wexler wrote that out of all the songs that were initially submitted to Springfield for consideration, she approved exactly zero.
Oh, no.
For her, he continued, to say yes to one song was seen as a lifetime commitment. Springfield disputed this, saying that she did choose two, Son of a Preacher Man, and I can't remember who wrote Son of a Preacher Man.
Some guys, I think, from down in Alabama. I think they were Muscle Shoals guys.
And Just a Little Lovin'. He was surprised, given Dusty's talent, by her apparent insecurity, which, let me tell you, the big stars are often quite
okay. Little inside info here.
She wasn't that big a star, I guess, at the time. But she later attributed her initial unease to a very real anxiety about being compared with the soul greats who had recorded in the same studios.
Huh.
Eventually, Dusty's final vocals were recorded in New York. Additionally, she stated that she had never before worked with just a rhythm track. And it was the first time she had worked with outside producers, having self-produced her previous recordings, something for which she never took credit.
That is pretty heavy. This is a song you all know, but this rhythm track was cut in Memphis. It was born in Memphis.
In November of 68.
Wow, that's early. Here we go, Dusty Springfield, Son of a Preacher Man.
Thank you. preacher's son. And when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Passing Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was. Sweet talking to me, he come and tell me everything is alright. He kiss and tell me everything's alright. Can I get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was.
You know, while she was in Memphis, not recording the vocals on that, she recommended to the Atlantic people, "Hey, you should hear this band, Led Zeppelin."
Your kid?
They're made up of some other English rock bands, and I think she knew John Paul Jones or somebody.
Yeah.
And they said, "Well, okay, we'll give them a listen on your behalf," and then,
Wow. And they signed.
She was their little entree into the world of Atlantic Records.
That's amazing. Okay. That is amazing. Thank you, Dusty Springfield. Yeah. We might not have had Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. The Immigrant Song.
That's great. You know, one thing that I was thinking about. Thinking about Stanley, he always inserted himself into these things he was doing.
And a lot of people don't accept that kind of writing at all.
Yeah.
But I understand that, because I can think of some stuff like that I don't care for. But he made the stories more believable
by putting
himself in there. And they might have not been so believable. But, he did humanize the situation.
Right. Yeah, I like that participatory journalism.
Yeah.
Hunter Thompson did it, but I don't think anybody had done that before. People who would go out, they would usually just do kind of a straight up interview with somebody or write.
Who were your early influences?
Same questions every time. Yeah. But he was cut from a different cloth there. I just think he had the confidence to go into situations, or maybe not the confidence, but it came across as confidence.
Yeah.
That he wanted to go in and be a part of this and say, wait a second, actually, I know more about this stuff than you possibly do, right?
He was definitely like that.
Yeah.
He would not be shy about letting you know how much he knew.
Yeah.
And that's just a nice way of saying something else, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
But, he was always nice to me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. He's very nice. I'm glad to have known him, man.
I didn't know him well, and I met him early on, and I thought, oh, man, what a character this guy is. I don't know about this cat. And then I didn't see him for, many years, and I was surprised he knew who I was when he signed my library reject copy of Dance with the Devil.
Oh, okay.
And of course, he had to tell me, oh, well, this is the paperback. And
right.
I wanted to call it, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So, wow. Anyway. Well, he did some great work. And I got to say this. I didn't meet him until 2016. I always knew who he was.
That's when y'all did the interview.
That's right. But I worked with his mother, Ruby Booth, at Sharp Elementary School in 1975 and 76. Wow. And I knew her well. I worked with her for like 2 years.
Did you even know who he was back then?
I did. I knew who he was. And she would always, in fact, she came in one day after I got to know her. We were sitting in the teacher's lounge one day. I was a teacher's aide there.
Yes.
And we were sitting in the teacher's lounge, and she said, Mr. Bearden, do you know a guy named Jan Winter? And I said, well, he's, you know, the, like, publisher and maybe editor of Rolling Stone magazine. She said, well, he keeps calling the house looking for Stanley, and I just didn't know who he was.
Wow.
And I said, yeah. So Stanley was hard to find, I think, when he needed to be, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For good reason, I'm sure.
All right. Okay, well, let's push this along a little bit.
Yes.
And I think, do we want to play something else off the Beale Street Saturday night thing, or do we want to go straight to the Rolling Stones?
You know, I've got
Fred
some,
Ford.
I got a Fred Ford queued up.
Okay, good.
I found this single years and years and years ago, and it's on Cover Records, and there's an address on York Avenue.
Okay.
And the house is still there. I don't know who lived there.
Wow.
I'm going to find out.
Okay.
But it was Fred Ford, and Stanley hung with Fred. Fred was a tough guy, man.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, he worked for repossession companies and stuff.
Yeah.
He would go out and get their money for them.
He would do what needed to be done.
He would do what needed to be done. I was terrified of him for years, but he turns out to have been a great sweetheart. And But Stanley knew him well, and I wanted to play this song. I played it for Joe Restivo the other day because he had sent me an unbelievable copy of Stardust, played by a great alto player, modern alto player, and it reminded me of this, so I had to send it to him. So just hit the go button on the computer, and I'm going to hit the go button on the board for you.
Oh, we're going on the computer. Hang on.
See? Oh, you got that.
I'm going to
put it in red.
Turn that up, okay? And then we're going to play here. Yeah, okay. I don't know nothing about the board. Okay.
Oh, so
we're going to play. Whoop.
Did I do that?
Okay, I think we spilled a little coffee. Well, hey, folks. Yeah, we're all right. Did you play it?
It's playing. Hold on.
Okay. I don't hear it anywhere. All right, folks, we're trying.
Put it on. It's on comp.
It's on comp. Yeah, we're on the computer.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, here we go.
Give me another chance.
Okay, here we go, Jim. Hit it.
You're right. Thank you.
All right. That was beautiful, Jim.
Oh, man, Fred Ford.
Fred.
Miracle, yep. And just a badass.
Yep. Yep. There we go. Okay. All right. So, you know, another thing, Stanley was really known for the book he did on the Rolling Stones, and he lived with those guys and traveled with them for several years in the late 60s and early 70s. He lived in London for a long time, and he was just in on a lot of things. Like when they went to Muscle Shoals to record, he was right there with them. And he hung out. He and Keith Richards were very, very close. And they had matching skull rings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he told me about that. He was the first to get the skull ring. Oh. That's what he told me.
Well, of course.
And then he said Keith saw that and loved it and went to the shop where he had bought his ring, and he bought one.
Yeah. So Stanley set Keith's whole style bag going.
I think so. Well, and, you know, with the Gram Parsons stuff, you know, Keith started wearing those, like, nudie suit, you know, jackets and all that stuff. You know, it was a big deal. It was really a big deal. And he was in the studio with the Rolling Stones when they were cutting a lot of different things. And one thing that we did want to play is a cut from, have we got it, Jim?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, hang on. We're going to get it here. What cut are we playing? We're going to play Gimme Shelter, and Stanley was right in the mix with this, and so we're gonna leave you with Gimme Shelter this morning. I do appreciate you being along with us on this. That's right. Yeah, the Maisels brothers made a documentary, Gimme Shelter, and this is all about Altamont and what happened there. There was just a lot of stuff going on at the time, and Stanley was kind of in the middle of it. So are you ready to hit the go button, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay, and or I guess maybe I could have done that.
No, you can't do it.
Okay, here we go.
I'm going. Don't tell me it's not playing.
Well,
CD1.
Oh, here we go. That's it. See you next week, folks. 9 a.m. right here on WYXR.